We're going to continue our discussion today of the topic of Abraham and Yishmael. This shiur, more so than other shiur, it's really a direct continuation from last shiur. And again, crossing over the boundaries of Lech Lecha and Ve'era as well. A few prefaces for this shiur. First of all, it should be a refuah shlema for Tinok ben Leah Nisa, a nephew of one of the participants in the Midrashah, should see a swift refuah currently in the NICU. Also, my father-in-law's yahrzeit is coming up, so it should be Le'iloi Nishmat Aaron ben Pinchas. And additionally, and very relevant to our shiur for today, in light of recent events, yesterday's events in New York, it should be in memory of those lives that were lost in the terrorist attack yesterday in New York City, and a refuah for all of those who were injured in that terrorist attack as well. Let's jump in. To quickly recap what we said yesterday, we're not going to go all the way back to Bereshit Noach, but to quickly recap what we did on Monday. We talked about the fact that it was very odd that immediately following HaKadosh Baruch Hu telling Avraham that his children, at Brit Ben Abitarim, telling him that he would have a child and that child would inherit Eretz Canaan, we know that that child who is going to be the father of the 71st nation is Yitzchak. And so immediately Yitzchak should be born at the end of Parshat Lech Lecha. But immediately following Brit Ben Abitarim, who is born instead? Yishmael. And we said, why is this happening? Why is Yishmael being born? It should be Yitzchak. And the whole way that he's born is so odd. Sarah still can't have children, even though she's the one who's going to produce Klal Yisrael. So she says, no, take my Shivcha Mitzri, take my Egyptian maidservant, marry her and have a child with her, and somehow I'll be built up through her. And in fact, she does get pregnant. She then gets thrown out of the house because Sarah gets upset. Amala comes and says, don't worry, go back home, you'll have Yishmael. And Hagar comes back and has Yishmael. And then immediately after Yishmael's born, the next paragraph, the last paragraph of Lech Lecha, God comes back and says, Sarah will have a son, and that son will be the son to inherit you and be the beginnings of Kal Yisrael. And so then that further emphasizes our question. If it was always going to be Yitzchak, so just produce Yitzchak. What's the purpose of Yishmael? Why this weird interlude, this uncomfortable interlude of Avraham marrying Hagar and having a child? Who is Yishmael who's going to get immediately written out of history in terms of the history of Klal Yisrael right afterward? And we saw also last time that Avraham was sensitive to that, because as soon as he hears that Sarah is going to have a son and that Sarah's son is going to inherit and be the one to continue on Klal Yisrael, he immediately turns to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and says, Lu Yishmael yichye lefanecha. But make sure Yishmael has a life before you, meaning Yishmael needs meaning now. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu responds and says, no, the person who's going to inherit you and be the continuation of Klal Yisrael, that's going to be Yitzchak. But he says, not to worry, I will make sure that Yishmael grows into a multiple, large, a tremendous nation, Mashu Kazed says, at the end of Parshat Lech Lecha. What's the function of Yishmael? What's happening? And so what we claimed last time is that if God promises that Avram will have children who will inherit Eretz Yisrael, and Yishmael then is born before we're then told Yitzchak is going to be born, it must be, the text is indicating to us, that somehow Yishmael is a necessary prerequisite for Yitzchak to be born. For some reason, somehow Yitzchak can't be born until Yishmael is born first. And we explain that by introducing the concept of the seven midot, or the seven sirot, the seven created traits of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, through which Hashem interacts with the world and guides the world. Hashem interacts and guides the world through these seven created midot. Midot that we intrinsically have in ourselves, being B'Tselem Elokim, that we're also obligated to master, to control, to guide our own internal world by taking control of those midot that we have inside. Of Chesed, Gvura, Tiferet, Netzach, Hod, Yisod, and Malchut. And we pointed out last time as well that there is one individual across history who fixes each one of these midot into reality. One individual who embodies, who is that midah, and brings that midah to its full tikkun, and the whole story of their life is the unfolding of that midah. And for the first midah, the midah of chesed, that individual is Avraham Avinu. Avraham is synonymous with chesed. Avraham is the midah of chesed. The unfolding of Avraham's life is the unfolding of the midah of chesed. And we noted the fact that while chesed is generally used in a positive way, chesed can both have positive expressions and negative expressions. Chesed is parv. That's why you can have a pasuk, like the one we saw last time, which says that lo aleinu, if a man has an inappropriate physical relationship with his sister, it says chesedu. So what does chesed mean? We define chesed much more broadly and correctly as going beyond one's boundaries. The tendency of anything to go beyond its boundaries, a positive expression of chesed, is loving kindness, altruism, benevolence, helping an old lady across the street, bringing somebody who's sick a bowl of chicken soup, helping somebody with their homework, all of the things that we normally define as chesed. Those are positive expressions of chesed. That's positively going beyond my boundaries. What are examples of negative expressions of chesed? So we said last time, arayot, having a relationship that I'm not allowed to have, going beyond my boundaries and connecting to someone that I'm not allowed to connect to. Arayot, theft, going beyond my boundaries and taking something that's yours that's not mine. Trespassing, literally going beyond my boundaries and leaving my boundaries behind and going to somebody else's property. Those are all examples of negative expressions of chesed, of distorted chesed, of problematic chesed, of usur chesed. And we said that the root of that is that when chesed is extreme or unbalanced, that's what leads to negative distorted chesed. Extreme or unbalanced chesed, that's negative chesed. I'm meant to go beyond my boundaries and help you when you need help. But if I go and take that to its extreme, if it's totally untempered, if it's unbalanced, then I go and steal from you also. Meaning that chesed needs limits. What did we say provides chesed with its limits? Gvura, it's opposite. The opposite side of... It's opposite sfira, it's opposite midah. Gvura is the tendency of anything to remain within its boundaries. Limits, borders, boundaries, turning inward. Izu gibora kovishet yitzro. Who is a gibor? One who looks inward. And even though they may have an inclination to do something, a yitzer hara that jumps out at them, that wants them to go and do something, they're able to maintain their boundaries and push that down. I rule over my yitzer hara. I don't let it come out. I have limitations. I have borders. I have boundaries. That could have negative expressions also. It's also parv. I could remain too much within my boundaries. I could not help you when you need help. That's remaining in my boundaries in a way that's negative. There are much worse negative expressions of gvura, which we'll get to as we go along in Sefer Bereishit. We're going to unfold the first three midot of chesed, gvura, and tiferet with Avram, Yitzchak, Yaakov, and their children. But for now, just to note, gvura can also be a negative thing. But with regards to chesed, gvura is what tempers chesed. It's what balances chesed. When the two are in balance, then the system functions properly. Bringing it back to our inyanim and concluding our recap so we can jump into new material. Avraham is chesed. And if Avraham is chesed, what that means is that Avraham contains within him all elements of chesed. Both the positive expressions of chesed and the negative expressions of chesed. Now, pause for a second. In his lifetime, Avraham obviously is only going to manifest the positive expressions of chesed. But if he and the midah are one, then Avraham contains within him the potential for the negative expressions as well. Why does Avraham need to produce Yishmael before he can produce Yitzchak? Why does Avraham produce Yishmael before he produces Yitzchak? Because It seems that we need to remove the negative, or rather the potential for negative chesed, for negative expressions of chesed from within Avraham Avinu before he produces Yitzchak. We need to remove the negative expressions of chesed, the negative elements of chesed from within Avram before he can produce Yitzchak. Because even though those negative expressions remain in potential within Avram Avinu, if he produces Yitzchak in the Jewish people before removing that potential, then that potential will manifest as part of the national identity of Klal Yisrael when they become Klal Yisrael. And so to make sure that that's not part of Klal Yisrael's national identity, that needs to first be removed before we can have Yitzchak. And that's why, that explains the end of Parshat Lech Lecha. God says, you are going to produce the 71st nation, you are going to have a child. The child that he's referring to is Yitzchak. But before he can produce Yitzchak, he must produce Yishmael somehow through Hagar HaMitzrit, remove the negative elements of chesed from within himself, that potential. Then God comes and says, you're going to have Yitzchak. So our claim is that Hagar HaMitzrit is the means by which we're extracting the negative elements of chesed from Abraham, and those negative elements of chesed in potential that existed in Abraham are manifesting in the individual who is Yitzchak, and will be part of the national identity of B'nai Yishmael for all time. That's where we left off last time. It was a longer recap than usual, but the concepts here are subtle and incredibly important in how each claw leads to the next claw. The domino effect here is critical. Questions, comments, thoughts up until this point? I know I always recap at the beginning. There's in educational theory, they say that when a teacher or an educator recaps, it's very, very important and very helpful for one person. The teacher, the educator, just recaps, usually because it's not actually helpful for the group. But I think it's important to go over the concepts and to help us get to where we got to. But that being said, does anybody have any questions, thoughts, comments about anything we said up till this point? Because now we're going to get into the concept of today's shiur, which is the individual Yishmael, and what that means, Ma'aseh Avot Siman Labanim, for B'nai Yishmael throughout history, from sources in Pesukim, Chazal, Midrashim. Any questions up until this point? Nothing? Good? Are we good?
So good.
Okay. Great. So let's tackle the... It's not a challenging topic. It's a charged topic. The charged topic of Yishmael, the individual, and Yishmael throughout history. Let's start with Pesukim. When we look at the Pesukim about Yishmael, we immediately see it reflecting this root of him being the embodiment of the negative aspects of chesed, the negative expressions of chesed. What did we say were those negative expressions of chesed? I don't have that thing, it doesn't matter. Oh, I did. Excellent. What did we say were negative expressions of chesed? So, for example, Arayot. What else?
Stealing.
What?
Stealing.
Gezel.
Trespassing.
English. Right? Any extreme, any lack of boundaries, any total lack of boundaries. Watch now as we go through the Pesukim and the Midrashim and Chazal, how it completely follows through in the identity of Yishmael. From before Yishmael is even born, Yisara throws Hagar out of the house, and she runs off into the desert, and a malach comes down and says, don't worry, you're going to have a child. And that child's name is going to be Yishmael. And you have to go back to Sarah's house and endure the difficulty there, and you're going to have Yishmael. Look at how the malach defines Yishmael before he's even born. Source number one, from our parsha, Parshat Lech Lecha. Perek Tetzayim Pasuk Yud Aleph. Vayomer La Malach Hashem. Hina hara violadet bein. You're pregnant and you're going to have a son. Vekarata shmo Yishmael, and his name will be Yishmael. This is one of the very few names where HaKadosh Baruch Hu, or one of his emissaries, actually is the one to name the child. It's also true of Yitzchak, by the way. One of the very few names where HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself is the one to define the name, or here the Malach is the one to define the name. He says, you're going to call him Yishmael. Ki shama Hashem et onyech. Hear how the Torah describes him. He hasn't even born yet. V'hu yeh pere adam. He's going to be a totally wild person. No boundaries. No self-restraints. He's a wild animal of a person. In fact, the Mefarshim go so far as to say that that's not even what the words here mean. If I want to say that my daughter Eliza is a good girl, what would I say? How would I say that in Hebrew? Yalda Tova. So in Hebrew, where is the noun and where is the adjective? The noun is first and then the adjective. What is he called here? A pere adam. He's wild. He's wildness that's like a person. That's basically how it's phrased. The pere is the noun. The adam is the adjective. He's a completely wild person. He's a wild animal. He's a person of a wild animal. That's what he is. Totally lacking any self-restraint, any borders, any boundaries. Continuing on, same pasuk. Yado bakol v'yad kolbo. His hand is in everybody else's stuff, and everybody else's hand is going to be in him. No borders, no boundaries. Yado bakol v'yad kolbo. End of the pasuk. We're not even giving any words. V'al penei kol echav yishkol. And he will dwell over the surface of all of his brothers, of all of the world. No borders, no boundaries. That's how the Malach defines Yishmael from before he's even born. When I gave part of the Shir and Shir Kali earlier today, somebody asked a very important question, which I want to address now, which should be how we frame all of our discussion today, which was, doesn't that seem to take away Yishmael's freedom of choice? If we're saying he was basically doomed to be evil, he's doomed to be the negative expression of chesed, he's the manifestation of the negative side of chesed, we're being told here he's a para adam, yadova kol v'yad kol bo v'al pei kol yon shkon, he's no hope! What about Bechira Chofshit? So the way that I would understand it, both now when we're talking about Yishmael and the individual, and later on in Shir when we talk about B'nai Yishmael as a national identity, the way that, this is from me personally, this is not from my Rebbe, the way that I understand it, is that everybody has certain inclinations that they're born with. I think I gave this example last time. I think it actually came up in Midrashah last time. I said, if you were to try to argue with me and tell me that I'm wrong, I would say, no, you're wrong. Why? Because I'm stiff-necked. Why am I stiff-necked? Because I'm Jewish. Why is that not racism? Because I'm told, I'm she'orefu. The Torah defines us as a stiff-necked people. That's part of our national identity. We're a stubborn, stiff-necked people. What that means is we have a natural inclination to be an Am Kshei Oref. But as you see in Parshat Ki Tisa and throughout Sefer Devarim, part of the goal there is that we're meant to break that stiff-neckedness. It's something which maybe we may have a national inclination towards, but that means that part of the struggle for us as a national identity is to break that stiff-necked perspective and to see the broader perspective of godliness in this world. That's defining our challenge as a people. And so I would say, what's happening here is that we're defining the challenge for Yishmael, the individual, and defining the challenge for B'nai Yishmael as a national identity. They have the free choice and the capacity to overcome that, if I'm correct, and I think I am, because I'm an Am Sheorov. I think I am correct. The fact that Yishmael, the individual, and B'nai Yishmael on a national scale have chosen to embrace that identity in some of the most horrific ways, I would claim that that's a choice, not a destiny. So I would claim. But that's up for debate. In any case, that's how the Pesukim are defining Yishmael from before he's even born. The person, before he's even born. And then in the next Parsha, Parshat Vayira, at the very end of Yishmael's story, when he rides off into the distance, we're told a little bit about the rest of his life, and we're told what profession he chooses. What profession does Ishmael choose? What's his chosen profession? He becomes an archer. Good, you're in Shirkoli, right? Yeah. He becomes an archer. Says source number 2, Parshat Vayira. Vayihi Elokim et hana'ar. Vayigdal vayishef amibar. Vayihi rovak heshet. He becomes an archer professionally. What does an archer do? What is an archer? It's somebody who takes a bow and arrow, and their whole life is shooting something beyond their boundaries, going into other people's realities. And not just going beyond their borders and boundaries, but dafka with a bow and arrow, dafka in a destructive way. They're shooting a weapon of war and destruction into far out places. He's embracing that part of his identity. He becomes a Rovakashat. That's on a level of Sukkim. We have, for sure, aspects of trespassing. Yadova kol, biad kol bo, valpanei kol achav ishkon. Certainly a lot of boundaries. And Chazal will fill in the picture for us based on that, because they were all drawing from the same root. And we see Chazal, they will then take it even more forward into the deep connection between Yishmael and a distortion of Chesed. Extreme unbalanced Chesed. Look what happens when we move to Chazal. Source number 3 on your sheets, there are many parallel midrashim that tell this story. The one here I found most beautifully keys in on our point. The story of when HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants to give the Torah to a nation. And so HaKadosh Baruch Hu, God, he goes around and he goes to each nation and says, do you want the Torah? And each of them say, well, what's in it? And then HaKadosh Baruch Hu cites one Isser in the Torah, knowing that it will be the one that would be most challenging for them. Every nation says, you know what? If that's in it, I'm out, I pass. Comes God to the Jewish people, he says, do you want my Torah? And they famously say, Na'aseh v'nishma, we accept it and we'll hear what's in it afterward, and that's why they get the Torah. One of the nations that's offered the Torah are B'nai Yishmael. Hear the way the Midrash frames it. Source number 3. Halach lo l'midbar Paran, Eitzel b'nei Yishmael. He goes to Midbar Paran, HaKadosh Baruch Hu goes to Midbar Paran to b'nei Yishmael. Amar lahem, he says to them, Mikablim atzem haTorah, do you want the Torah? Amru lo, they said back, Makativbe, what's inside of it? What does it say? Makativba. Amar lahem, God says to them, what's in the Torah? Lo tignov, not let us steal. Amru lo, according to the Midrash, B'nai Yishmael says back, Hi Yerushat Avinu. We can't take the Torah if that's the case. That's part of the inheritance of our forefather Yishmael. It's part of who we are. He quotes our Pasuk, Yado Bakol V'yad Kol Bo. Einanu Yicholim Lichyot Belohi. We can't live without Gezel. It's part of our national identity. It's part of who we are. Belohi V'lota. They reject the Torah because it would deny them the ability to steal. So claim Chazal. What do we have left? Arayot. So two things that indicate the direction of Arayot. One of them is the following Gemara in Masechet Kiddushin. The Gemara there goes through a long list of items where it says 10 measures of such and such an item came into the world. 9 were taken by one person or one group of people. And 1 was taken by the rest of the world. For example, 10 measures of beauty came into the world. 9 measures were taken by Eretz Yisrael, Yerushalayim, I forget which one. Were taken by Eretz Yisrael, Yerushalayim. Were taken by Yerushalayim. 9 measures were taken by Yerushalayim. And 1 measure was taken by the rest of the world. Says the Gemara, 10 measures of znut came into the world. 9 were taken by B'nai Yishmael. And 1 was taken by the rest of the world. Again, the Pesukim and Chazal keying in on these issues. Arayot, Gezel, trespassing, a total lack of boundaries. Yishmael being a complete and total embodiment of the negative expressions of Chesed. Of unbalanced and extreme and problematic Chesed. How do you draw the negative elements of Chesed out of Avraham Avinu? Sure, they only exist there in potential. Fine, they're in there somewhere. How do you draw that out? What's the mechanism to get the negative elements of chesed out of Avraham Avinu. You don't have to understand why, but what's the answer to that question? You know the answer.
Yishmael.
No, Yishmael is what's gotten out.
I would think to balance the plura.
What draws out, what removes, not negates, what removes the negative elements of chesed from Avraham Avinu? We raised it as a question at the beginning of Shir.
Is it literally having Yishmael?
How does he have Yishmael?
Hagar
Amitu, did you say that? Oh, also Shirkoli. Okay, there we go, good. Trying to not talk about Shirkoli people yet. Yeah, Hagar Amitu. Hagar Hamitzrit somehow is the mechanism, is the means through which Yishmael is drawn out. She draws it out of Avraham Avinu. Why Hagar Hamitzrit? What does that mean? Well, what is the only thing we really know about Hagar? She's Mitzrit. She's from Mitzrayim. And that tells us a lot. Because it wouldn't be a Shir and Bereishit so far if we didn't go back to Parshat Noach. Because Parshat Noach is the origins of the new world. So let's go back to Parshat Noach. Whose child is Mitzrayim? Ham. And remember back to our discussions in Parshat Noach, how we talked about, even last year we talked about, what was the real issue in the Dor HaMabul? What was the problem in the generation of the Mabul that led to the Mabul? How did we define it last time?
Hamas.
Which we defined as?
Gezel.
Gezel, Arayos, or? Negative chesed. That their issue was a distortion of chesed. That's why their issues were in Arayot. Their issues were in Gezel. It was a generation that had a total breakdown in the reality of chesed. And that's what we said last time. How were they destroyed? Midah keneged midah. There was a flood, which was a bestowal of chesed, a bestowal of rain, but an extreme and unbalanced bestowal of rain that instead of being soaked in by the earth, floods the earth because it's unbalanced, it's extreme. That was their problem. And when we had our Noach discussions, we said that there was one individual who drew the pre-Mubble existence into the post-Mubble world. Who was the one person to draw the pre-Mubble world into the post-Mubble world? That was Ham. Ham, who had relations in the Teva, even though it was Usser. Ham, who had some sort of Arayos-oriented interaction with his father immediately when they would leave the Teva, that leads to his Klala. Ham is the bringing forth of that pre-Mubble, distorted the chesed mentality into the new world. And who is one of Ham's primary children? Mitzrayim. And as we said also in previous Shiurim, and I put the psukim back here, in sources number 5 and 6, V'nei Ham, Kush, Mitzrayim, Ufutu, Kana'an. In the next source, we have the opening of Parshat Arayot, where the Torah goes and lists all of the Arayot. Every single one of the forbidden physical relationships. And the introductory paragraph to that discussion is framed as follows. Source number 6. Vayikra perek yirchet pasuk aleph. Vayidaber Hashem Moshe limor. Daber al b'nei Yisrael v'amarta lehem ani Hashem Elokeichem. Kima'asei Eretz Mitzrayim asher yishavtem ba lo ta'asu. Don't do like you saw in Eretz Mitzrayim. What did you see in Eretz Mitzrayim that you're not allowed to do? Read forward. It's all of the Arayot. The nation that is Arayot in essence, that embodies Arayot in essence, is Mitzrayim. What happens in our story? Avraham Avinu is given over as a wife, Hagar Hamitzrit. Hagar HaMitzrit, who because she's relating to the essence of what Mitzrayim is about, those issues, is able, seemingly, to spark within Avraham Avinu, to light up within Avraham Avinu, those negative elements of chesed, and literally be the individual to draw them into herself, and produce a reality of the negative distorted chesed in Yishmael. Hagar HaMitzrit, in her relationship with Abraham, because of who she is, she, through her essence, seems to be able to draw out from Avraham Avinu those negative, distorted, extreme elements of chesed, which she relates to as being a Mitzri, draw them into herself, and through their union produce the embodiment of distorted chesed, which is Yishmael. That's the suggestion, very powerful suggestion of my Rebbe. When he said it in the Shirim that I listened to many years ago, he posed it as a potential answer to the question of how it's possible and what happened, and I think it resonates very strongly. It's a very, very powerful concept, and one that, before going forward, is worth contemplating. Forget about Sfirot and Midot and Chesed and all of these things, put all that aside for a second. It brings out something very lemaisa for us. It's something which we understand on a visceral level, which we experience in our own lives. That the people who we choose to surround ourselves with bring out or ignite different parts of our inner being. It's something to very seriously consider when thinking about friends, when thinking about roommates, and perhaps, not perhaps, definitively, most importantly, when thinking about one's spouse, who one wants to marry. When the day comes, and date however you want, I'm giving an example, but you're sitting across the table from someone, and you're talking to them at a date. So that person who's sitting across the table from you is going to bring out certain parts of your own personality. Some people who are going to spark your funnier side. Some people are going to spark your more serious side. Some people are going to spark your more contemplative side. Some people are going to spark your more thoughtful side. Different people bring out different aspects of ourselves. And we hang out with different people, even with our friends. We know we're going to certain things. If we want to go see a certain type of movie or go and do a certain type of activity, we know who to reach out to. Who's going to relate to that, bring out that part of my being? And it's something to remember and think about very carefully. If I'm sitting across from somebody and dating that person, I need to be thinking to myself, wow, it's amazing that this person is bringing out my funny side, and I'm kidding around with them and I'm enjoying myself, but are they igniting only that side of myself? Are they bringing out other parts of myself? What do I want? How do I want my marriage to be defined? How do I want my whole inner world to be defined? What parts of myself do I want to be sparked all the time? To be more dominant or more recessive? Those are very important things to contemplate. And we see that here, assuming that this is true, that Avraham Avinu connects to Hagar, and on this deep of a level, now let's go back into the deep end, that on this deep of a level, Hagar is somehow able to, even in Avraham Avinu, who refused to express any iota of potential of negative chesed, was able to draw it out of him and produce Ishmael, who was the embodiment of negative chesed. That's the power of that type of relationship, and of what one person can bring out in another person. So, that closes out our discussion of Yishmael, the individual. Oh, rather, sorry, to close out the discussion of Yishmael, the individual, we'll turn to the end of his story, which is in Parshat Vayira, when we again kind of close out his story. We're told, go back to that source, in source number 2, Perech Hafalof Pasuk Chaf, Vayihi Elokim Etanar Vayigdal Vayeshev Midbar Vayihi Rovek Hashet, and then it ends with Vayeshev Midbar Paran, right, exactly where HaKadosh Baruch Hu found the Yishmael generations later to offer them the Torah. He goes and settles in Midbar Paran, Vatikach Lo Imo Isha Me'eretz Mitzrayim. That's how his story ends off. He's married off to a woman from Mitzrayim. Yishmael's story concludes with him bonding to those very same elements of arayot and negative and extreme chesed. Bonding to them for life and building a reality in the context of Mitzrayim. Questions, thoughts, comments on Yishmael, the individual? Yeah.
You said that they experienced the entirety of Jewish history.
What? Everything that they did set the stage for a part of Jewish history. Not all of them walked through all of Jewish history.
Sure.
Yes.
So does that also apply? Does that also apply to Ishmael?
He's not one of the Avots.
No, I know, but I'm saying because he came from Avraham also, does that mean?
No, I think what it means more powerfully is that every single one of us throughout Jewish history have to work to make sure to remove the negative elements of chesed from within ourselves. But Maase avot siman lebanim. In avot elash shloshas dumar. There's only three avot. And so it's coming through them specifically. I suspect ishtok gufo that it also means the imahot, but certainly not outside of the context of the avot and imahot. What it does mean, though, is that the interactions that we have with Yishmael in these parshiot, since the avot are interacting with Yishmael, with Esav, as we'll see in future parshiot, that because it's their maase avot, Zeu siman labanim. And so what actually we're going to do right now is see how Chazal incredibly, almost prophetically, understood the nature of our struggle with Bnei Yishmael for all generations based on Maaseh Avot Siman Labanim. Not because of Yishmael, but our interactions with Yishmael in these parshiot. And that's exactly where we're transitioning now. Yeah?
But don't you believe also that it's not only limited to our the Avot's Avot Siman Labanim, but decisions that our personal ancestors maybe those
kind of
spiritual ramifications for us.
100%. More locally, though. There is a certain flow to Jewish history, like we saw when we did the Dalet Malchiot. There are only Dalet Malchiot. True, as far as I understand it, we could bring Mashiach before the end of the Dalet Malchiot. It seems we're not successful because we're already in the fourth Malchus. We're already in the fourth exile. We're already in the fourth Golos. But there are only going to be four stages, and they're going to be those four. Nothing changes that. There are certain paradigms that are set up. We can always end history sooner by fixing history. But if not, history will play itself out in a certain way. As a whole, who chooses to opt in to make that history play out the way that it does or not? That's up to the individual. Those are issues that we talked about, for those who remember, in Sefer Devarim. Is anybody here in Sefer Devarim? We talked about the fact that the Klal of Klal Yisrael has a certain trajectory. And that's why Klal Yisrael can be given a promise. Klal Yisrael, you will never be wiped out. Klal Yisrael, you will endure forever. What happens if I do something that's Nisarkari, though? I can be cut off. The answer is each individual has a choice. I can plug into Klal Yisrael or not. Klal Yisrael will endure, but I, as an individual, am not guaranteed to endure. I have to choose to plug into that reality. There are Bnei Yishmael who can choose to opt into the historical narrative of Yishmael, Lira, or who can choose to fight that and deny themselves a part in the negative aspects of the story of Yishmael in their historical process. That's how I understand it. Lufi Amidati. That's how I understand it. And that's also why this is the part that 3 years ago I didn't teach, but we're going to do this time anyway, because I don't think, just because sources are not necessarily the most comfortable to go through, doesn't mean that we can skip them. And these are some really, really powerful, incredible sources that I really think that we need to know as Jews, that we need to know in terms of living in a, if we're all turning to the news to try to understand how to deal with difficulties in the modern world, then kal v'chomer b'nosh kal v'chomer, we need to be able to turn to Chazal, even if it's not comfortable. And even if it is comfortable, whichever way we feel, however we feel about these issues, whatever our internal space is and how we relate to our cousins, we have to relate to Chazal and struggle with Chazal and understand what Chazal are saying. And so that's what we're going to do now. So let's talk about Bnei Yishmael. Up until now, we've been talking about Yishmael, the individual. But as we keep emphasizing, we learn Sefer Bereshit, we also have to view it as the prototype Sefer for history as a whole and examine all of the interactions in its context on a level of Maaseh Avot Siman Labanim. So let's examine how our interactions with Yishmael and these parshiot set the stage for the interactions between Yishmael, Bnei Yishmael, and Klal Yisrael throughout history. For that, let's turn to the final paragraph of Parshat Lech Lecha. The final paragraph of Parshat Lech Lecha. Hashem once again promises Abraham that he will have children and that his children will inherit Eretz Yisrael. And this is where he's promised that he's going to have Yitzchak, in the context of this paragraph. However, That promise is on condition that Avraham live up to the brit between himself, his children, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. What is the nature of that brit? What is the content of the brit at the end of Parshat Lech Lecha? What mitzvah is introduced? Brit Milah. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives Avraham the mitzvah of Brit Milah, and it is in the context of the mitzvah of Brit Milah that HaKadosh Baruch Hu promises Avraham and his descendants Eretz Yisrael. Now things get a little complicated, because who actually performs Brit Milah in this parsha? First, let's give prominence to he who deserves it first. Avraham obviously performs Brit Milah, like that was assumed for you, right? Avraham performs Brit Milah, he enters the Brit, but as you said, who also performs Brit Milah? Yishmael. Yishmael absolutely 100% performs Brit Milah in this parsha. And while the children of Avraham Avinu in the form of Klal Yisrael obviously continue to perform Brit Milah, Yishmael and his children also seem to be a part of this Brit, and they also perform Brit Milah to this very day. This seems to imply that both B'nai Yisrael and B'nai Yishmael have a connection to Eretz Yisrael and have a claim to inherit Eretz Yisrael. You see how immediately charged these psukim become, this discussion becomes. Nothing happens in the world without a source in Torah. From the very moment that we're told the context of the brit with the Kadosh Baruch Hu that guarantees us Eretz Yisrael, we see already how complicated those issues are going to become. Because both Avraham performs Brit Milah and his descendants, and Yishmael performs Brit Milah and his descendants do as well. Which means that in my understanding then, based on my Rebbe as well, the roots of the historical struggle between B'nai Yisrael and B'nai Yishmael over Eretz Yisrael are in this very parsha. If both are a part of Brit Milah and both maintain a commitment to Brit Milah, then they must both have a connection with Eretz Yisrael. So how do we understand this? Yishmael and his children do perform Brit Milah. They do claim Eretz Yisrael. And in fact, Bizman Azeh, they have complete control of the most prominent part of Eretz Yisrael. What's the most prominent part of Eretz Yisrael? Har HaBayit. They have control over Har HaBayit. They have dominance over Har HaBayit. And they have for hundreds of years. How do we understand this? And on a more fundamental level, which will help us answer this question, why is the connection to Eretz Yisrael contingent upon Brit Milah in the first place? What do the two have to do with each other? Anybody who's been any semester of my shirim before know that we always come back to the same point, and we always explore it from new ways, because we always have to come back to the same point. If we're going to talk about the essence of what Eretz Yisrael is about, and a connection to Eretz Yisrael is about, we have to go to the very center point of Eretz Yisrael. What's at the center of Eretz Yisrael? Yerushalayim. What's at the center of Har HaBayit? What's at the center of Yerushalayim is Har HaBayit. What's at the center of Har HaBayit? The Beit HaMikdash. What's the center of the Beit HaMikdash? The Kodesh HaKodeshim. And what stands at the very center of the center of the center of Eretz Yisrael? What stands at the center of the Kodesh HaKodeshim? The Kruvim. The Kruvim stand as the centerpiece of Eretz Yisrael, and therefore defining the core, the root, the centerpiece of everything that Eretz Yisrael is about. What is the meaning of the fact that the Kruvim stand at the center of Eretz Yisrael? What are the Kruvim all about? Chazal tell us amazingly, and I've struggled for many semesters to put this source on a sheet. I finally found it. On Bar Ilan, I kept searching for Kruvim, and it happens to be in this Gemara. It references the Kruvim without referring to them by name. But I spent time this summer until I finally, I was like, I know it's a Chazal, I've seen it, I've seen the Gemara, and I just couldn't place where it was. So now it's on the source sheet. You can see, you don't take my word for it. I was very excited. I've been quoting this for years, and I never knew exactly where in Shas it was. I couldn't remember where I saw it. Chazal make an incredible comparison. They say that each one of the Kruvim was keneged, was an embodiment of, a representation of. One was of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and one was of Klal Yisrael. And says the Gemara, Source number 8. Ketzad hein omdim. How did these kruvim stand in the Kodesh HaKadoshim? Rabbi Yochanan Bar Belazar, Chad Amar Pnehem Ish Al Achiv. One said that they would be facing each other. V'chad Amar Pnehem Labayit. And one said, no, they would face Dafka away from each other, facing to the walls of the Kodesh HaKadoshim, and facing away from each other. How do we understand that those two are opposite? Second underline. Said, no, it's Lokasha, it's not an argument. They would face each other, Kan Bizman Shi Yisrael Osin Ritzono Shel Makom. When Klal Yisrael would do Ratzon Hashem, the Kruvim would lovingly gaze into each other's eyes, they would face each other. Kan Bizman She'en Yisrael Osin Ritzono Shel Makom. And the two Kruvim would face away from each other. Miraculously, they would turn away from each other when Klal Yisrael would go against Ratzon Hashem. What this means is that the center of all reality is the relationship between God and the Jewish people. That stands at the center of Eretz Yisrael, Yerushalayim, and therefore in the center of the entirety of the world and the universe itself. The center of the universe, the center where all things came from according to Chazal, is the Evan HaShtiyah, is the centerpiece that stands right underneath Har HaBayit. That's the center of all of reality, is the relationship between God and the Jewish people. And that means that the question at the center of all of reality is, are we facing Hashem? Are we fully engaged in the relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Or lo alinu, are we facing away from HaKadosh Baruch Hu? To redefine it and refine it even more, the question at the center of reality itself is, is there a relationship of love and giving to the other at the heart of reality or not? That's what the world is about. I wrote it down. I wrote down the quote. I don't think he meant it as a quote, but I wrote it down as a quote anyway from my Rebbe when he said this. He said so strongly that anyone who does not see things as such is missing out on the core of Kol HaTorah Kula and Kol HaOlam Kulo. That a person who doesn't understand that this is what the centerpiece of all of reality is about, they're missing out on the entirety of what all of Torah is about and what all of reality is about. Period. Nikuda. Everything revolves around this focal point. If this is the center of creation, then this is the essence of it. Every aspect of life and of Torah are an extension of this core. Are we engaging in a relationship of love, of giving to a Kadosh Baruch Hu, with a Kadosh Baruch Hu, or not? What was your question?
Your answer.
If this world, if all of creation, if all of reality is really about ahava, is about relationship, is about giving, a giving relationship of love, or a loving relationship of giving, then as we get closer to the center of the world, the center of reality, the more intense this love, this ahava becomes. As such, on the flip side, as we get closer to the center of reality, the more sensitive the world and reality becomes to deviations from this ahava, from deviations to this relationship of love and of giving. As we get closer to the center of the world, the higher the demands will be with regards to the purity on the levels of love and relationship. As such, the patience that this land of Eretz Yisrael, Yerushalayim, but Eretz Yisrael as a whole, will have to the misuse of this capacity of love will be much shorter. If one uses their capacity for the opposite of love, and the opposite of love, as we've defined it in the past, is lust. If one uses it not to create a relationship of love and of giving, of selfless giving, but instead misuses it as a means to gratify myself, to selfishly take what I want from the other for me, then that's a hafara of the Brit of Eretz Yisrael. That's a destruction of the Brit that guarantees us Eretz Yisrael. It's taking the same very capacity for love and connectivity and using it for the exact opposite. Again, lust is about using the capacity for one's own selfish, self-centered, indulgent purposes. Instead of focusing on the other and completely giving to the other, the person is using the other to focus on themselves and provide themselves with what they want. That's what it means to be mefer, the brit of Eretz Yisrael. coming back to Parshat Arayot, that's the conclusion of Parshat Arayot. We've spent many times quoting the opening of Parshat Arayot, but let's now quote the conclusion of Parshat Arayot. Source number 9. After the whole list of all of the Arayot were told, Kadosh Baruch Hu warns us, source number 9. Al tit'amu bechol eile. Don't be metame yourself and purify yourselves with all of these arayot. Ki bechol eile nitnu agoyim asharni meshalech mnichem. Because it was in these ways that the people who lived in Eretz Canaan were metame themselves. And because they were metame themselves through arayot in these ways, through lust, through a breakdown of what relationship is meant to be, va'titmah ha'aretz, the land became tamei, va'efkod avona aleha va'taki ha'aretz et yoshveha, and therefore the land will vomit them out. The Torah uses very specific words. That's a very odd word choice. To my knowledge, it doesn't appear anywhere else in Chumash. The land will vomit them out. And we're warned on the flip side to make sure not to act like the people of Eretz Canaan and Eretz Mitzrayim. Because if we do, Pasuk Chavchet, V'lo takia Eretz Etchem, don't let the land vomit you out, V'tamachem otah kasher ka'at agoy shelifnechem, like it vomited out the nations that before you. Why use this lashon? What does it mean to vomit it out? Sorry to get graphic, right? But what does it mean to vomit? Where does that come from? What does that mean? It's not a punishment. When I go and I eat bad food, and I ingest it into my system, and my system wants to process that food, but my system, when it encounters that food, recognizes that it's incompatible with what's come into my body. The two cannot coexist. And so my body, on its own behalf, rejects and expels that food from my system because it can't process it. It can't coexist with it. And so it's a natural physical reaction. It vomits out the food. That's why the Torah is using this language. The Torah is not saying that if you don't keep my brit, if you are metame yourself with arayos, then I will throw you out of Eretz Yisrael. The Torah is saying something much deeper and much more refined here. Eretz Yisrael is a land of love. Eretz Yisrael is a land of loving giving. Because love is, ahava means to give. It's not a cute word for a Sheva Brachos. It's an emes of Torah. Hav means to give. That is love. It's about giving to the other. And if we misuse that capacity, says the Torah, and use it for lust, we don't give, but we use that same capacity to take, it's incompatible with Eretz Yisrael, the land of love, the land with the Kruvim at its center. And it will have, the land will, so to speak, have a physical reaction to that, a spiritual physical reaction to that, and will vomit you out because it can't, it's too sensitive. Eretz Yisrael is a sensitive land. And that kind of tumah is incompatible, and the land will vomit us out. It's saying that if you are engaged in arayot, the land is so spiritually sensitive to distortions on the level of love and relationship that will instinctually vomit the Jewish people out as a natural reaction. At its core, Eretz Yisrael is a land of love and a land that can only tolerate a reality of true ahava, giving love that is embodied by the Kruvim that stand at its center. This is why Eretz Yisrael is contingent upon Brit Milah. That's the essence of what Brit Milah is about. Brit Milah is a brit with HaKadosh Baruch Hu that we take our connective capacity on the deepest, most intimate, and most personal of levels, and we dedicate it completely to be used for Kedusha, to connect in a way of Kedusha, of giving, and of love, and never, Chas v'Shalom, to misuse that capacity for personal gratification or for lust. That's the breach for Eretz Yisrael. I'll take your question, and then we have to finish up on Yishmael. We haven't gotten back to Yishmael yet. Yes?
In terms of this, of Eretz Yisrael, so to misuse something, so how does that, like, I mean, I'm sure it does, but do you know how it ties back into how acting this way that
Yeah, it's talking about Ariot. That paragraph is the concluding paragraph of Ariot. Ariot is the misuse of that capacity. Instead of being for kadosh purposes and giving purposes, for selfish and taking purposes.
Oh, that's the only time I'm...
That paragraph that we just read is the... It says, don't do like Eretz Mitzrayim and Eretz Kanaan. Here is the whole list of Ariot. And then that paragraph that we read is that last final paragraph of that section of the Torah.
Okay. Thank you.
Sure. Let's return to our topic. We pointed out that both Avraham and Yishmael performed Brit Milah. There are very few sources on this topic, but the sources that there are on this topic are incredibly striking. Sources that address, in Chazal, Yishmael's relationship to Brit Milah and to Eretz Yisrael. One of them, it's an incredible source, is a Zohar in Parshat Va'ira. Not Va'ira, Shmot, in Va'ira. The Zohar there, which is on your source sheets in source number 10, it laments the fact that Yishmael was born and that Yishmael has Brit Milah. Says the Zohar, Vay al hahu zimna di'it yilid Yishmael ba'al mavit gizar. Woe to the time that Yishmael was born into this world and that he was given Brit Milah. Specifically hones in on that fact, that he was given Brit Milah. Ma'avad kucha brichu, what did HaKadosh Baruch Hu do since Yishmael is keeping Brit Milah? Says the Zohar, Achik lehu livnei Yishmael midvekuta dila'ila. HaKadosh Baruch Hu cut off his connection up on high. He's not going to be connected to the higher realms of existence. However, v'yahav lehu chulaka letata ba'ara kadisha begin hahu giziru dibahom. He gave him a portion in the world below, in the holy land of Eretz Yisrael, because of Brit Milah. Uzimnin b'nei Yishmael lemishlat ba'ara kadisha kadhi rekana mikol zimnasagi. And in the future, says the Zohar, B'nai Yishmael will have rulership over Eretz Yisrael because of Brit Milah. However, says the Zohar, Kad'iu Reikana, but their Milah somehow is Reik. There's a different quality to the Brit Milah of Yishmael and B'nai Yishmael than there is to Avram and B'nai Yisrael. Claims the Zohar that the Brit Milah somehow of Yishmael is reik. It's empty. It's lacking. And just like their Brit Milah is lacking, and that's what connects them to Eretz Yisrael, says the Zohar, Kima digziru dilahon b'reikana b'lo shlimu. Their rulership of the land will be reik, will be empty, because their Brit Milah somehow is inherently reik and isn't complete. And therefore, concludes the Zohar, V'inon ya'akvun lehon livnei Yisrael la'atava liduchtaihu adi yishtelima hu's chutad b'nei Yisrael. And they will therefore be able to withhold b'nei Yisrael from coming back fully to Eretz Yisrael, because of their Brit Milah. Since it's rake, it will withhold them for a certain amount of time, but then eventually B'nai Yisrael will be able to overcome. And the Zohar there continues very beautifully inside for those who want to see on their own. According to the Zohar, the Brit Milah of B'nai Yishmael is empty and therefore limited. And because of that, B'nai Yishmael's historical control of Eretz Yisrael will ultimately be empty and limited. We see another similar reflection of this in the story of Akedat Yitzchak in Parshat Vayira. How so? We're told in the Pesukim, in source number 11, by Akedat Yitzchak, Perek Chafbet, Pasuk Aleph, we're told, Vayhi achar avim ha'ilav Elokim Yisad Avraham, God tests Avraham and tells him to go and shecht Yitzchak. And tells him to go and shecht him alachad ha'arim asher omar elecha, on the mountain that I will tell you. Skip to Pasuk Dala, the second underline. Vayom HaShlishi, it was on the third day. Vayisa Avraham et Inav, Avram raised his eyes. Vayar et HaMakom Mirachok, and he saw the place in the distance. Vayomer Avraham al Ne'arav, Shulachim Boim HaChamor, he said to the Ne'arim, stay here with the chamor, stay here with the donkey. Vani v'anar nelcha ad ko. And we'll go up to the mountain. Me and Yitzchak will go up to the mountain. And we'll go and bow down there and come back to you. So two questions on this story for our purposes. One is, what did Abraham see? God said, go to the mountain that I will show you. And on the third day, Abraham lifted his eyes. What did he see that he knew that that was the mountain? Second of all, who are these Na'arim that were with them that he left behind? And why did he leave them behind? Rashi brings down the answer to these questions. I just quoted the Midrash that Rashi draws from. But Rashi brings down this Midrash, which says as follows. The next source on your sheet, source number 12. L'achar shoshe yavim ra'a anan kashur al gav ha'har. Avram saw a cloud attached to the mountain. That's what he saw when he lifted his eyes. Amar, he said, kimidumani zeu makom shamar li HaKadosh Baruch Hu lalot et Yitzchak b'ni alav. This must be the mountain that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants me to perform Akedas Yitzchak. Amar lo Yitzchak. He said to Yitzchak, Avram says to Yitzchak, ro'e et mi'uma, do you see anything? And Yitzchak replies, Amar lo, yes, anan kashur al gavahar, I see a cloud attached to the mountain. Then Avraham says to the two Ne'arim, who the Midrash identify as Yishmael and Elazar, Amar lahem li Yishmael ula Elazar, ro'im atzem mi'umad, do you see anything? Amru lo, lav, no, I don't know what you're talking about, I don't see anything at all. Amar lahem, Avraham says to them, Ho'il ve'einatem ro'im, since you don't see anything, v'chamor zeh eninu ro'eh, and this donkey doesn't see anything either, shmulach en poim ha'chamor, you stay back with the donkey, am ha'domeh le'chamor, a nation that's comparable to the donkey. Why are we quoting this Midrash? Because in its own way, it's bringing out a very similar point, which is, we know that Yishmael has a connection to Eretz Yisrael. And we know, again, as we said before, this is talking about Har HaBayit. Avram performs the Akedah on Har HaBayit, on what will become the Makom HaMikdash. And we said Yishmael has a relationship to Makom HaMikdash. In our day and age, he has dominance over Makom HaMikdash. And yet, we see from this source again that he doesn't seem to have a complete relationship to it. When he looks at Makom HaMikdash, when he looks at Har HaMoriah, what does he see? He doesn't see anything. He doesn't see the depth of what the mountain is about. He doesn't see the Anan Kashur to it. Yitzchak sees it. Yishmael doesn't see it. Avram sees it. Yishmael doesn't see it. Something's lacking. And that's what's being brought out here. In this story, Chazal again are telling us that Yishmael doesn't really have a deep connection and relationship with Eretz Yisrael. He doesn't really see what Eretz Yisrael is about and what is happening on the land on a deeper level. In the case of the Midrash, it's even more specific. Again, like we said, focusing on the ability to see the essence of Har HaMoriah, of Har HaBayit, Makom HaMikdash. On a physical level and a physical level only, B'nai Yishmael maintain a commitment to Brit Milah. B'nai Yishmael come from Shem, and they come from Avraham, and they continue to perform Brit Milah until this very day. They are a people whose source comes from the chesed of Avraham. However, alongside that is an ancestry that comes from Cham, that comes from Mitzrayim, that comes from Hagara Mitzrit. Underneath the surface, there are a nation that's inherently linked to the negative, extreme, and unbalanced chesed that comes out in the form of an identification with and a dedication to arayot, gezel, and a complete lack of boundaries in a way that is focused purely on the self. Their brit milah is external. It's reik, it's empty, like the words of the Zohar. While they have a connection to Eretz Yisrael and a certain control over Eretz Yisrael, it's limited. Eventually, it will give way to those who are the true keepers of Brit Milah and who are truly dedicated to a reality of proper giving and Ahava, which is the Jewish people. I don't want to get into specifics, but one, whether you want, there are many ways by which one could call B'nai Yishmael Bizman Hazeh. You could define it as a larger group of people, you could define it as a small subsect of that group of people, whatever you want to do it. But for sure, some element of B'nai Yishmael is very deeply connected to issues of fighting over land that's not theirs. Issues of theft, one only to look at the statistics in Eretz Yisrael to understand the depth of the issues of theft that go on in the context of Eretz Yisrael. And even Arayot. Even Arayot. While there are elements of Bnei Yishmael that can even present themselves as being more, quote-unquote, dedicated to Tzniut than perhaps many elements, unfortunately, of Bnei Yisrael, deep down, one of the ways that they betray the true nature in its most extreme form is when they're told and when they live up to the decision to those who are the most extreme of Bnei Yishmael to blow themselves up, which in and of itself is a total release of all boundaries and destruction of everything around them for the purpose of going to an Olam Haba, which in their mind is defined as going to a place that's entirely defined by selfishly taking in the realm of physical relationships. That's how they define Olam Haba. That's certainly how those define Olam Haba who are blowing themselves up. This is setting the tone. As we said, it's not defining who they have to be. It is most definitely defining the struggle. And unfortunately, in our day and age, we see Yado Bakol V'Yad Kolbo. We certainly are seeing all over the world V'Al Pnei Kol Echad Yishkol. We're seeing a reality of Gezel, a reality of Arayot. In theory or in practice or in theology, a destructive and very complicated worldview that stems from a distortion of Chesed. I apologize, I know that I'm over time, but I want to leave you with one final midrash. Midrash that's worth catching online if you have to go. It's a mind-boggling midrash. I just did a cursory search online for something and I caught that it quoted this midrash. A midrash that is so on target that it forced some more modern scholars to claim that this midrash must have been written later on, because no way this midrash could have been so prophetic in its nature about the essence of Bnei Yishmael. Pirkei d'Rabbi Eliezer. Pirkei d'Rabbi Eliezer. There's one final source in Chazal that I want to talk about with you. Before we mostly leave the topic of Yishmael behind, we're going to touch on Yishmael as we go into farther elements of Parshat Vayira, but this is really our one shiur dedicated to understanding the essence of Yishmael and the Maaseh Avot Siman Labanim implications. It was written thousands of years ago, long before Bnei Yishmael had any sort of modern identity, and speaks about our interaction with Bnei Yishmael at the end of days. Now the Midrash opens by quoting a pasuk from none other than Bilam. Why does it quote a pasuk from Bilam? I wish I could have given you more. I didn't want to go more than two sides on the sheet. But I would have quoted you the entire paragraph there in source number 13 from Parshat Balak, where it says that Bilam turned to Balak before returning home and said, "Before I go, I'm going to give you one final vision about Acharit HaYamim, about the end of the days. About the end of days. I'm going to give you one last vision about the interactions between all of the nations and Klal Yisrael at the end of days." And many of them are very, very cryptic. All of them are cryptic. Some of them are cryptic about who they're talking about. But all of them are very cryptic. And one line says, the one line that I gave you, which is underlined, Vayisame shalo vayomar, Oy mi yichye mi sumo kel. Woe to he who lives, who is given the name Kel. What does that mean? So it's begging for the Medrash to explain it. And the Pirkei Eliezer, Pirkei d'Rabbi Eliezer, responds. Says the Pirkei d'Rabbi Eliezer, Amar Bilam, Mishivim Lishonot, this is in your source, it's the last source, number 14. Mishivim Lishonot Shebara HaKadosh Baruch Hu Be'olamo, of the 70 nations that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created in the world, Lo Sam Shmo Le'achad Mehem Ela Yisrael. HaKadosh Baruch Hu only placed his name on Klal Yisrael, with one exception, and the Medrash here is not 100% clear. In fact, one of the commentaries on Pirkei d'Rabbi Eliezer gives it a different girsa entirely. Ho'il v'yishva HaKadosh Baruch Hu Shmo Shel Yishmael L'Shmo Shel Yisrael. But the way that the corrected version in the Perush explains it, there were, except for one other nation which God also put his name Kel on. And which nation did God give his name Kel to? Yishmael. And we see that in the Pasuk, Oy mi yichyeh b'yamav. Woe to the person who lives in the days of Ishmael, where Ishmael has a level of dominance in the world. That's how the Midrash understands the pasuk. Woe to he who lives in the days where Ishmael is in, where Ishmael has any power, is in control. And then, ironically, none other than Rabbi Ishmael himself says, Chamisha asar dvarim atidin b'nei Ishmael la'asot ba'aretz ba'acharit hayamim. There are 15 things which b'nei Ishmael will do in Eretz Yisrael at the end of days. Again, this is written long before there is a b'nei Ishmael. So, I don't know how to explain it to you other than to say, Ruach HaKodesh. I'm sure you can find people who will give you other answers. And also, when one reads this Midrash with a critical eye, as if one reads any Midrash with a critical eye, these items are certainly subject to interpretation. Chazal intentionally wrote things cryptically. That being said, I here would assume the path of least resistance. The prophetic words here are striking. I'll read you some of the 15 things that Rabbi Ishmael says that B'nai Ishmael will do when they have dominance in Eretz Yisrael at the end of days. B'nai Ishmael will yimdidu ha'aretz b'chavalim. They will measure out the land with ropes. There will be some measuring out of the land, perhaps dividing it up with ropes to determine who's going to live where, perhaps. V'yasu beit hakvarot l'mirbat son ashpatot. They will turn Jewish graveyards into dumping grounds for trash and garbage and the remnants of their animals, which when we came back to Yerushalayim in 1967, that was exactly what we found. They had to dig away the garbage that was dumped onto the grave, onto Jewish graveyards in the areas of Eretz Yisrael that were under the control of B'nai Ishmael. We're not going to read all 15. Skipping forward. Yarbet ha-sheker, v'tigosa amet. There will be tremendous sheker in the context of Eretz Yisrael. And truth will be lost. And we all know, anybody who watches the news, the way in which there is no reflection of truth when it comes to the realities of B'nai Yisrael and B'nai Yishmael in the context of Eretz Yisrael. Later on it says, V'yikamel ha-niyar v'kolmos, which is understood to mean that contracts and documents will be completely disregarded. And the 15th item is perhaps the most chilling. Says Pirkei d'Rabbi Eliezer, thousands of years ago, the last underline of the 15 things, V'yivnu binyan b'hecha. And they will build a building on Makom HaMikdash, which we certainly know to be the case today. Again, these statements are certainly open to a certain amount of interpretation. It is Chazal, it's written cryptically intentionally, but I think they speak for themselves. To finish off, Mamash to finish off. The Midrash concludes with another statement of Rabbi Ishmael that addresses our direct conflict with B'nai Ishmael in the end of days. The Midrash says that B'nai Ishmael will wage three milchamot shel mihuma, three wars of chaos. That's toward the middle of the paragraph. The od haya Rabbi Ishmael omer shalosh milchamot shel mihuma atidin B'nai Ishmael la'asot ba'aretz ba'acharit hayamim. It says the final one of these wars, the next underline, the second to last underline, Ve'achad bikrach gadol sheberomi shukaved mishnehem. The greatest war between B'nai Ishmael and the world will be the war against Rome. And how have we defined Rome in our previous Lech Lecha Shiurim? It was first Rome, and then it was Christianity, and then it becomes the Western world itself. That's what Rome means in Chazal. It's code for later on, the identity of Rome is Western, the Western world itself, Western culture itself. And it says that the greatest, most destructive war at the end of days will be the war between B'nai Ishmael and Romi, or as we've understood it to mean, the Western world itself. And in through that war, in the context of that war, through the ashes of that war, says the Midrash, last underline, Umisham Bein David Yitzmach. From there, Bein David, Mashiach Ben David, will sprout forth. V'yireb Avdon Shel Eilu Va'ilu, and will see the destruction, the loss of control and dominance, the subjugation of both nations of Bnei Yishmael and the Western world along with it. Or if you will, of the two brothers that we struggle with, we haven't defined one of them fully yet, but the subjugation by Bnei Yisrael of Bnei Yishmael and Bnei Esav. The children of the modern day Bnei Yishmael and the children of Esav, the Western world itself. I'll read the Midrash. Umisham Bein David Itzmach, from there Bein David will sprout forth. V'yireb Avdon Shel Eilu Va'ilu, and we'll see the destruction of both of these, of both Bnei Yishmael and Bnei Esav, Bnei Yishmael and Romi or Western society itself. Umisham Yavo Le'Eretz Yisrael, and from there we will return to Eretz Yisrael. My understanding of this Midrash, this is our final point, is that at the end of days, we will see the war between Edom and Bnei Yishmael, Edom, Bnei Esav, the Western world, and Bnei Yishmael, a war that we see raging in front of us in our very days. It is from there that Mashiach will sprout forth, defeat both Bnei Esav, Bnei Edom, and Bnei Yishmael, see the rise of Malchut Yisrael, the return of Klal Yisrael to Eretz Yisrael, and a return of complete dominance over Eretz Yisrael to the Jewish people in the end of days. Whether you choose to read the Midrash this way or not, B'srat Hashem, we should see an end to all levels of exile. We should see the rise of Mashiach and a return to Eretz Yisrael, B'srat Hashem, and b'mhira b'yamim. Sorry for the longer shiur. I hope that we meaningfully covered the potential meaning of Maaseh Avot Simcha Lamanim on the level of Bnei Yishmael. And having done so, we will continue on to further levels of unpacking now Yitzchak Avinu himself and the rest of the Sirot and the process of history as we go on into deeper levels of Parshat Vayira next year.